nobody want to be sold to. Yeah? People want to buy, yeah, and they want to engage.
This is the Safari. The Safari is a tour around the consumer, brand, and retailing industry. And we have the great privilege here at my company, Traub, to really be exposed to many of the great minds of the industry who are forming and shaping the future of many different parts of the consumer, brand, and retail world. And I felt it was quite interesting for us to be able to not only learn from all of those people as we do every day, but memorialize it into a podcast, which could then be shared with many of our friends and clients and you, obviously, the listener. Welcome back to the Safari. This is Mordy Singer speaking. I am thrilled to continue the culture series that is the latest series of podcasts that we're doing, talking about how culture shows up in business across the consumer retail landscape. And I am so lucky to have had the opportunity to sit down with Thomas Harms, who is the managing partner of EY's Global Retail Practice. He has 20,000 consultants across the globe in 150-plus countries. And he's really spending all of his time thinking about where the future of retail is going, where the consumer landscape is going, where the consumer themselves, the consumers themselves are thinking about and what they need to see. And we talk about, you know, retail hospitality, we talk about technology and omni-channel and the way the global economy is affecting retail. And he's just a very wonderful man who is passionate about consumer retail and knows a hell of a lot about it too. So please do stick around. What a pleasure it is to have Thomas Harms of EY, who is the managing partner of the Global Retail Practice. And where are you? Thank you for joining us on this podcast.
Yeah, great to see you, Morty. Actually, I'm at home. So that's the new office. Yeah, as you can hear from my accent, I'm based in Germany.
No, I have no idea.
in Essen, which is pretty much in the center of Germany, and a lot of retailers are around here. So that's why I live here.
Oh, good for you. Well, listen, it's quite wonderful for me to have you, and thank you for taking the time to do this, because when we founded the Safari now 3 or 4 years ago, it was to identify the big thinkers, the big game, as it were, as if you were going on Safari, within the different areas of the consumer retail industry. And EY is obviously a huge name in providing thought leadership, consulting, financial advice to some of the largest companies, brands, and in your case, retailers across the planet. And so, you know, give, if you wouldn't mind, a 2-minute primer for the listener on your practice and the 20,000 people that you oversee across this wonderful globe in the retail world. Tell us about it.
Yeah, it's actually surprising for many. EY is normally associated, as you did it in the intro, with financial advisory, but actually 75% of our business is now advisory consulting services. We serve all of the global retail players around the globe. So out of the 1,000 largest retailers, there's only one company in the Philippines that we don't serve. And we are not intending to go with them, just to keep the anecdote. Yeah. So we work with all of them in all the aspects of their business. And it's a $2 billion business in 150 countries. So it's great to work with this young talent around the globe in this fantastic industry.
Yeah, well, good for you. So, you know, It's so wonderful to speak to someone who does indeed have a global view, a global impression, because your spidey sense, as it were, is everywhere because your teams are reporting in. And I've heard you say before that, you know, whether it be about the pandemic or about retail in general, You know, it's not evenly distributed how retail, how the consumer is actually being affected by life, by the economy, by the global impact of war or whatever it may be, the geopolitical situations. So let's take it sort of back to 60,000 feet. Let's take it out of the atmosphere. Forget 30,000 feet. Let's talk about this notion of retail. You're a passionate devotee of retail. You have been in the industry in one way or another for a very long time, if not your entire career, I think. Retail is so many things to so many as well, in the sense that, you know, you have this ability to sell product in a box. That's the most prosaic idea of what it is. But ultimately, it has been a sense of community. It has been, yes, a way for people to trade with each other. It's been a way for people to have therapy, retail therapy, and buy something to make themselves happy or to make someone else happy. It is an absolute must part of the human experience for maybe 5,000 years, potentially, you know, very seriously for 2,000 years. And it's become a pinnacle in the last few hundred years to have retail in our lives. It has been doomed to die a slow death, apparently, for at least a few decades. You and I talked about earlier that the department store was deemed to be going away in 1992. I mean, Charlie Rose was talking to Marvin Traub on his show in 1992 and asking him about the demise of the department store. Obviously, the department store has grown and outstripped the years the decades since then. So why don't we just zoom out from your perspective? Where are we today in retail? Where are we coming from? And what does it mean to you to be in this industry?
So first of all, I think retail plays a very important role in our society all around the globe. It's just to fulfill our basic demands, to get access to food, to things we actually need. But it's also, as you said, it's a kind of social club. It's engaging. It's a place where you want to be, where you meet other people, where you engage. And it's very local. So retail all over the world looks very different. Although there are some things modern retail formats may have in common, but that's already a trap you can easily fall into. Just copying the box model that worked in country A and bringing it to country B. Secondly, I see a lot of beautiful people working in the industry, highly engaged, very open to conversations. In many countries, it's the largest employer. So if we do something good for retail, then it's always good for society. And finally, retail is always in transformation. So it will never go away. Only the format, the way we see it, is evolving over decades. And even the local market around the church that has been there 5,000 years ago is still around, but it is no longer the number one format we see. And the same is true for department store, home improvement stores, category killers. Everything we saw is not going away. It's just growing, having a peak, and then coming down. And then a new format is coming up. What we now see with what many people called e-commerce. So with the internet, online shopping, that will never mean that the physical retail store, the bricks and mortar experience will go away. It's just no longer the number one and the one and only format.
Yes. So it's so interesting. Everyone's very binary on the subject, right? People say, oh, e-commerce is going to replace retail. And I often talk about it here with my colleagues about this notion, not of omni-channel, but of uni-channel. It's just one pipe into the consumer. But e-commerce is retail, but it also drives brick-and-mortar retail, and brick-and-mortar retail drives e-commerce. That's this circular flywheel, this this top spin that is provided. So technology is not replacing retail, it's actually aiding retail and helping it grow. So from your perch, which is a very high perch across the whole industry, technology and its use across Asia, for one example, is one technological ecosystem of you know, maybe China-centric retail ecosystem. And then there's the Western system, maybe Amazon, maybe at the nucleus of it. And the technology stacks that are maybe sort of in their own ecosystems, driving omni-channel, driving, you know, super apps that allow for everything from transportation to retail to communication. How does the consumer interact differently around the world with retail? Because obviously, if there are two ecosystems, maybe there are more than two ecosystems, but there must be a very different mindset emerging as different technologies and different ways of doing things happen around the world.
Well, let me first start with in the notion that there is a channel. Yeah. So, and that is already a DNA that is very product centric, that is trying to sell something to people, and nobody want to be sold to. Yeah? People want to buy.
People want to buy. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And they want to engage. And technology provides you with new opportunities to engage with your consumers. If the shopper is not in the center of everything you do, you are risking to become irrelevant anyhow. Yeah? And technology can even increase this risk if you just use it to do faster and more efficient what you have always done in the past. The first players on the internet saw this, and they said, okay, we can use technology to improve the experience for our consumers and for the shoppers by making it more convenient, by providing more transparency on price that the brick and mortar stores were not in a position to do, and their value proposition was not fit for this. Yeah. So first, that was very good and gave a lot of growth. So now is the question, how can brick and mortar channel or providers use technology to increase the experience they provide? Yeah? The first reaction is make the things we do faster. So in an analogy to the invention of the car, so we are now having faster horses. Yeah, instead of building cars. Or if you think of a butterfly, how it evolves over life, digital is not making the origin of the butterfly faster. It's really transformation. And the same is happening here, in my view, with technology in the retail industry. So if you use this to only do faster, more efficient what you already do, okay, you have a cost advantage, but you're not creating better experiences. And you need to look at this holistically. And in my eyes, there are different experiences consumers want. And thinking about experience can easily be mixed up with people dancing, having magicians playing tricks on you in the store, having cocktails, but that's only one part. Yeah, maybe that's what I call intimacy, where you engage, people want to spend time to actually shop. That's one experience, but there are two others. One on the other side is invisibility. There it's about speed, convenience, fast access, get what you need very fast in an efficient way. And the discounters are a good example of this in the brick and mortar world. And technology can even do this better and accelerate this. Yeah. And in the middle of that is something I call indispensability. You need somebody who takes holistically care of an issue you may have. That can be health, fitness, whatever, yeah, fashion, all around your living in your house. Yeah? And a retailer you engage with who is taking care of everything, combining home delivery, home services, bricks and mortar experiences, will win this game. So it always comes first to identify what your consumers really want, and then providing this where you can play best. And sometimes you can create this experience perfectly in a brick and mortar, in a personal engaging environment. And in other instances, the internet is a far better tool to create this experience.
Yeah, so let me recap that because I think it's important. So you're talking about the three I's and the three I's that you just outlined of invisibility, intimacy, and indispensability. You know, and I think that's one of the reasons I was so keen to have you join us on this podcast right now is that you know, this is the culture series where we're very invested here in what we call the return on culture, investing in people, understanding the people, whether they be employees or whether they be customers, and trying to react to them. So consumer insights on the one hand, but also trying to embrace our customers and to embrace our employees in our respective companies. And I think that those words that you use are so intimate. Well, one of them indeed is intimacy, but they're intimate words, all of them, around touching humans. And I thought it was interesting coming from you at EY, a huge consulting firm. And you would typically imagine a consulting firm to have a leader that maybe would be a little bit more sterile, a little drier, a little less human. So I think it's your whole approach is so modern. How does that help you and your team members, and how does that inform how you approach your clients, for example? Because I love the quote. In fact, we have it in our materials. The first page in one of our books is from the founder of Stoicism, Zeno, the Greek philosopher, who said, "We have two ears and one mouth, so that we can listen twice as much as we speak." And you know, to be consultative, to advise, you also have to listen. So how do you show up with your clients, delivering these messages of wisdom?
Well, first of all, it's when I talk to my clients, it's predominantly. So sometimes we have to fix a problem for today. Yeah, so that's why they buy advice. In my role, it's typically looking a little bit ahead, talking about the day after tomorrow and where we are going on these transformational journeys. So providing this North Star, this direction. Yeah? And sometimes that also means that you need to come back to who you really are, why you do this, and why retail at the end of the day exists. And here, forgetting about the consumer and the shopper, I think, would be ridiculous. Yeah? So, but you have to remind these people when they are so busy with their daily work, doing things better they already do, that there is this future. And coming from this North Star position then and taking it back and saying, okay, what can technology do to bring me there? What is the role of a store in the future that I need to plan for now? That is only possible if you can at least look a little bit ahead and look at a possible future or a probable future for them. Yeah?
Yes.
And if you know this end game, yeah, you can also design your future better, and you may have influence on how this probable future may look like also for the others. If you walk in this direction, do the investment in the right shape. Yeah? And I think it's also most of our clients like that they get this challenge. They don't only want to be reconfirmed that everything they do is already right. Yeah? So, and they sometimes forget about the fact that all their business is around customer experience, the shopper.
Yes.
Yeah? And if they do that right, the money and the cash flow that I can measure very well will follow.
Yeah, yeah. So that's a great segue into something else that I've heard you say, which is, you know, there are three ways to sell something. One is cheaper, or you sell something that is different, or you sell something differently. And I think this notion of differently to me is the most interesting to unpack or to double click into. Because, for example, you know, Marvin Traub, the late Marvin Traub, founder of our firm, he was credited with maybe coming up with this notion of retail as theater, retail as entertainment, and really, you know, diving into visual merchandising and sort of spectacle within retail, right? And that was what he did at the second half of the 20th century. And I think that what's an interesting evolution is this notion of retail hospitality, right? So this idea that we're welcoming consumers into our homes, we are welcoming them into the hearth of our businesses, and having a hospitality mindset to how we engage with them, one that is more warm, one that is less transactional. And I think one of the things, you know, for example, that I find so interesting is hospitality. You can take it even to the nth degree. You know, Equinox gyms have opened hotels. Restoration Hardware has opened a hotel in New York City. We have smaller brands like Annie Selke in America and Simon Pierce that have restaurants and little boarding houses. Orvis, the famous outdoors brand in America, has 15 or 16 lodges where you can go and experience the outdoors through Orvis. And so that's sort of taking retail hospitality all the way to literally hospitality. But I think the symbol of hospitality is quite wonderful in providing other services to these people as they come in. It could be co-working. I mean, some of the stores here are providing co-working spaces within the department stores to allow for a community to emerge within their boxes. So have you seen that around the world? I mean, are people doing this everywhere, trying to morph the spaces to change the use and blend them into sort of a mixed-use environment, perhaps?
Absolutely. Especially when we talk about this intimacy experience creation, and I would even add on this, that this is they are becoming little leisure parks. Yeah? It's really giving the people a reason to go to the place where they want to engage, where they want to spend time, and then give them the opportunity to buy from you instead of transactionally selling stuff to them. Yeah? So in this area, this works very well. Yeah? And there are many examples all around the world. Funnily, many of them are privately owned, smaller businesses that really get it, because that is harder to scale. Yeah? For the invisibility part, it doesn't work and it doesn't need to, because there you don't want to spend time. You simply want to get the stuff. Yeah? Mixing this up, I think, could be dangerous. Yeah? If you do this in this hospitality way, you may also get this part of the wallet of your shopper. Yeah, but then you need to provide it in an invisible way so that he looks at it or she looks at it in most of the cases. Yeah, looks at it, recognizes it, and that, yeah, we take it home for you. Yeah. So don't engage too much with it. We take care. Take your time to enjoy the music, the leisure park, the nice fashion show or whatever it is.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's a gentleman who you might know him, actually, who he's been on this podcast. He's a long-standing friend and client of ours, and his name is Scott Malkin, and he was on this podcast maybe 2 or 3 years ago. And he often talks about, he's the CEO of Value Retail, founder of Value Retail. You may have been to see them at Mass Mecklen or in La Vallée or Bicester Village in London. And one of the things he says is the future of retail is most likely digital, but the future of brand is physical. So therefore brick and mortar retail, because ultimately, as Maya Angelou says, the famous American author and poet, she says that people will not remember what you said or what you did, but they will remember how you made them feel.
Exactly.
And therefore the brand will come to life, when you touch them. And so do you feel that branding, so take that word branding and applying it to what brand means for the next 20 years, do you think that brand will have to show up more and more in physical environments?
Well, I think then in both. Yeah. So if you are engaging with these shoppers, the brand experience needs to be the same digitally and physically, or at least it needs to add one another. Yeah. So that the sum of the two is three and not only two. Yeah. And absolutely, I agree that customers will not provide all the data, all the insights they need to provide in order to set the retailer in a position to provide this experience to them, to everybody. People don't want this. Yeah? They have fears of getting abuse of the data. Some of the data is very personal, and they only give it back if they get a return on investment. And the return on investment in this case is this experience and this trust. And they will only give it to a handful of partners. And there the brand comes into play that is providing this trust around this and this theme around they want to engage.
We'll be right back. I want to take a second to explain to you why Traub is able to bring you the Safari. We pride ourselves in being at the very center of a very global, very complicated consumer and retail landscape. And in our travels, as we help think, manage, and expand businesses in many different channels and geographies, we're able to meet and learn from some of the great minds in this industry. And it's really wonderful to be able to bring them to you. And in doing so, I hope that you, the listener, will be able to learn a little bit more about what we do at Traub as well. Back to the Safari. So one other, speaking of engagement, one thing that I find fascinating is that the job of being a store associate, working retail, is also very different around the world. In some places, it is a very sought-after job. And in other places, less so. And in fact, the turnover or the churn of employees in, I would say, the most developed world is significant, because I think that, frankly, the brands, the retailers don't put enough energy and time into supporting and training and educating and fulfilling the career aspirations of those individuals. And in the YouTube influencer, TikTok influencer world, that young person who is working in retail has their mind potentially on other things. Do you see, or have you seen anywhere where these stores have tried to empower maybe their store associates in a way that allows them to be more than just an in-store associate, but maybe to be a brand ambassador and be an influencer online, be an influencer in-store, be more of a host to those, to an ambassador of the brand? Macy's tried it a few years ago, I think. They empowered 200 of their top sellers to also be digital influencers. I don't know if that continued. But have you seen it where maybe that line has changed and where people have invested more into the futures of their store associates?
So yes and no. So no, because many retailers still see employees as cost. Yeah? So the first reaction when revenue goes down is cutting personal cost. Yeah. So getting people from the sales square out of the store, replacing them with cheaper options. But that definitely does not encourage them to create more experiences. So that's one thing. The other thing is that most of the people that you described, Morty, they are expressive by nature. Yeah? So that's why people work in retail, because they want to work with other people. They want to engage. Yeah? So, and yes, many retail companies are very good in upsetting these people by confronting them with data analytical thinking, what they should do.
Yes.
And then
left brain versus right brain. Yeah.
Yeah. And then what you said about the brand comes into play. If you cannot only change the title of a store manager and call him brand ambassador or her. Yeah. That is just a name below it. They have to actually feel it Yeah. So they need this empowerment. They need the training and they need the freedom to do this. Our analysis shows that with the quality of the store manager, the correlation to the success of the store is 100%. Yeah. So if you have a good quality store manager, this person will know their best consumers. They will know where they walk around the store, and they may want to use data to even do this better, but they need this data in a way that they can live with it. They don't want an Excel file with numbers. They want dashboard pictures, something that talks to them, because they are so different to the people that are operating supply chains.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's really interesting what it is, especially as a business gets bigger and there's armies of people trying to control the message and trying to control the narrative, and rightly so oftentimes, because, you know, you don't want people going AWOL and saying crazy things and being rude and being and frankly just being inappropriate, right? But at the same time, you can't control everything. And I think authenticity is so important today. You know, people don't want it to be programmed and staged. They don't want someone to show up. Do you remember back in the day when you went to a Hollister store or Abercrombie and Fitch, and they were all trained to say the same thing? They say, "What's up? What's up?" Everyone would say, "What's up?" You know, it was like everyone was the same person. It was staged a la Hollywood. No one wants Hollywood anymore in that way. They want it to be the real deal. Like, be yourself, be authentic, be your best self, right? And that's the zeitgeist of today. And I think that I would love to find a place where retailers would actually maybe just let go of the reins a little bit to their store associates, to allow them to be themselves, how they dress, their hair, whatever it is. Just be yourself. And I think ultimately that happier associate who is less controlled will ultimately smile more and be more able to promote a buying environment versus a selling environment, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah, well, and that comes back to the brand. Yeah? So if the brand has this message, then the people working in the stores feel pride of being a part of this brand family or of this bigger thing. Yeah? And then they will automatically dress a little bit more up in the way the brand is associated with. Yeah. So there can be rules, of course, and they will look for guidance naturally because they want to do a better job every day. Yeah? They want to create this experience, and then they look after each other and say, "Oh, Morty is doing it like this. So why shouldn't I use this for the next podcast when I do it?" Yeah. And the same is happening there in the stores. So creating this brand, getting it into your DNA is important here. And we see that in some of the, there are some beauty chains that do this already very well. In luxury, it's working very well. And then you see some of the smaller local retailers that may only operate 10 or 50 stores where the owner, where the founder is creating this this lighthouse, yeah, where everybody is looking after.
And so you know, I know that I could speak to you for hours. So we in the interest of trying to keep it to someone's commute, this podcast, let's talk a little bit about the things that you're excited about. You're a very passionate guy. You've loved this industry globally for most of your career. What do you think is going to happen? You know, you speak of future of retail, but really, I think it's really the future of consumer as well that you are thinking about. Because and all the things that interconnect with that, right? So, you know, what happens when we have autonomous vehicles 20 years from now? Obviously, it changes the whole pattern of suburbia versus the urban environments versus, you know, the rural countryside. People could live anywhere and be driven by their own cars. I'm not asking you necessarily to think about that, but, you know, augmented reality. I mean, all these things are coming. We know that there are things, big things coming. Virtual reality, I'm less interested in, but nonetheless, that will probably come in some form too. But what do you get very excited about that you think, you know, 10, 20 years from now will be doing. I mean, I tell my children that on my 80th birthday, they're going to take me to the Four Seasons on the moon. We're going to go to the moon at the Four Seasons there. What similar things are you thinking about that might affect the consumer retail industry in the decades to come?
Well, what comes first to mind is the role that retail can play for all the sustainability issues. The retailers have the direct connection to the shopper. In the eyes of the consumer, they are responsible for the quality and for the footprint of everything they sell. And I think that many retailers already think about this, and so that they can really build a value proposition around this and become important in creating this sustainable living, better life options for many in the world. So that's one thing, and that is something we can talk an hour or longer about. The other thing is the opportunities that technology provides if you really put this consumer needs in the center of everything you do. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and that can be really becoming invisible for the stuff you only need. You don't care so much about, which can be very different for you, Morty, than for me. Yeah. So I'm a fashion victim. So I love to shop for fashion. Many other men don't like this. Yeah. So for them that don't like it, so get the shirt when it is most likely dirty, broken, whatever, or out of fashion. Simply get it. It's in your wardrobe and you don't have to care about it. Yeah. So for me, it would be nice to have this fashion show experiences live, augmented or whatever, so that I can really see, okay, how does it fit with what I have already in my wardrobe? Yeah? When I go with my glasses through the store and say, oh, that would work very well with the trouser you already have, so why don't you buy this shirt for it? So I think there's a lot of opportunity being there. And then getting, as you said, the employees back to this engagement, so this changed DNA when you are creating intimate or indispensable experiences. So that you really give more power to these people. And then I think that could be wonderful. And by the way, it's not so far away. If you look at the projects that are currently run in the Middle East, where they are building these super malls, the line and these new cities, they are thinking of concepts like this, where you don't have to care about the normal stuff. You go to entertain yourself and have the opportunity to buy what you want, and where you want to engage with the retailer.
And so thank you for that. Final question, under the heading and spirit of culture, can you end this discussion with one, two, or three thoughts around culture, whether it be how a CEO should lead and instill a culture-led approach within their companies, or whether it's trying to deliver a certain culture to one's clients. I mean, how does culture fit into business in your eyes?
Well, somebody said culture eats strategy for breakfast. So if you don't get your culture right, you can say whatever you want, the people will not follow you. So for the CEOs in the retail industry, for me, that means that need to be the authentic personalities that really say what they think and do what they say. Yeah? So in a very authentic way, and that can be very simple. Yeah? And then also giving this empowerment to their people to do this. So if there is a failure in a store, if something went wrong with the product, so the normal reaction today is that people push back because it's adding cost to the system. The new way should be, if you are serious about it, make them happy. Take it back and try to make the best out of the situation so that you learn from this failure. So it's really something you need to feed in your heart about this. So I want them to be customer centric, people lovers, also when they apply technology.
Make them happy, feel it in their heart, and I think that's exactly the right way to end this. You are a very unique and different breed of strategist and consultant, and it's a privilege to speak to you and to get to know you a little bit in this strange way. There you are in Germany, here I am in New York, and how wonderful that we're able to do this. And thank you very much, Thomas Harms of EY, managing partner, head of the global retail practice. Thank you.
Great pleasure.
If you want to learn a little bit more about Traub, you can go to traub.io, where you'll learn a lot about everything that we do. If you're enjoying the Safari, please do share it with your friends and colleagues within the industry. And please also don't forget to subscribe and like it. Until next time.